from deep inside the Death Star. I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Chad Beater.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
Welcome to Defrag Tools. This is episode 7?
Yep.
7? Wow.
Siete.
That's okay. The Star Wars 7, the Star Trek generations, the whatever 7th is. Today is on file and registry. We kind of covered the fundamental low-level stuff up to now with disk and stuff like that and CPU. This one's more about tracing and stuff. There's not as many metrics behind file and registry. It's just like it happened and stuff like that. This is one of those ones where you go, do you really need it? And the answer is probably no. Process Monitor does a really good job. What I will say, though, is if you're doing something else, like CPU or something else, and you think it's associated with file and registry issues, well, get this data at the same time, and then you can correlate it better.
Yeah, I think if you were just going to get file and registry information by itself, then rather than this, you'd want to use Process Monitor. But if you want to correlate it with some other activity on the system, that's where this really comes in handy.
The main thing I like about Process Monitor over ETW is you can do filtering, right? And so you're not collecting everything on the box and then filtering it after the fact. With Process Monitor, you can say, hey, I just want this folder or folder tree or something or this process, and then you can say drop filtered events at the same time, and then you're only recording the area that you care about, where this is all or nothing. So there's a couple more things you get out. There's a couple more stacks that Process Monitor doesn't have, but in the end, not that important. So, but as I said, great for correlation with other things. So I made a whole lot of scripts. Which one is it? File. This one is one of those ones where there's just lots of keywords. As far as the providers go, those are the three main keywords, file name, file.io, and file.io init. And then there's stacks. Now, this scrolls off the screen for miles. So what you can do is cull that down. And I do suggest that you do that, because there's no real reason to have all of them. This is the three that... So there's the files that the providers, and then, and the file name's around here somewhere, that's file name. And here are all the stacks. And for this batch file, all I did was grab all of them. Do you need all of them? No. If you're just worrying about who's creating a file, then I don't care about queries and flushes and file system controls and directory notifications, so just don't waste your time. The script has all of them so that when you get it, you can go, for this instance, I want that, and just press delete on the ones you don't want. Saying that, I mean, file activity isn't that abundant, so it's not really hurting you that much. The only two that probably will make a bit of noise is the read and write, because obviously that happens a lot. Just collect a dump, trace and see what we get. We'll do some, file copying. Copy, copy, copy. Lots of copies. That'll do. And stop. Then open it up with WPA.
Now does Process Monitor use the same mechanism that ETW tracing capture the data?
It actually doesn't. It isn't actually ETW based. I think because when the original Regmon and Farmon were coded, they were for 95 and lower, or 98. Well,
there was no ETW back then.
Yeah, and so I think it's a bit of a legacy. And so it's kind of the same concept. What it is Mark's just put a filter driver in the stack. And so as the requests go down, he records it. That's the request, and then it hits something and does the actual work, and then comes back up the other way, and he records the duration and the success or failure and stuff like that. But he does it as a filter driver. Mm. This actually just has it hard-coded into roughly the same logic as it goes through the filter manager, or whoever makes the data call, does the same thing. It records it going down, records it coming up. So the same data path, just a different mechanism. So he's like, he's made his own infrastructure rather than using like a callback mechanism to get the data. Now, when it comes to network, he does use ETW. So when he decided to add network support instead of doing it...
Instead of writing another filter driver.
Yeah. Now, I don't know whether, I've never asked Mark this, whether the filtering happens in the driver or if it happens in the program. So I don't know whether it's wasting bandwidth speeding up events or not. But yeah, it may be more efficient using Process Monitor. I know definitely from a point of view of capturing the data and putting it to disk, obviously it's more efficient than the amount of RAM you use. So just grab a one of these.
So now you got these file traces showing up, in, or file graphs showing up as a result of the things you enabled in the expert command line.
And so here's all the, there was a 80 gig per second spike here by someone. It must have been a flush out of the data. Lots of ways of pivoting this. What I'm going to try to do is make it look like Process Monitor, right? As I said, you can slice and dice this many ways. You can, you know, do it by, you know, how many, who's hitting the disk the most. Well, this guy just asked for.
And that is probably another advantage of this over Process Monitor, is that you can slice the data in various ways rather than just.
Yeah. I think if you're trying to do something like, if you try to get Process Monitor log file and maybe put it out to CSV and then pivot it some way, I think it's a little bit harder. Where with this way you could pivot, you could get the pivot right in here and then save it out in the right pivot order. And the pivoting in WPA is, you know, very, very good. So it may be better from that point of view.
From maybe sort of a performance analysis point of view, trying to figure out what's busy on the disk. Mm.
So if we grab start and end date, or end times, which are columns are available. So this is the maximum time that we saw an event, and this is the minimum time we saw an event. We'll sort by start time. And let's just choose something. I know that this command prompt itself isn't going to be too busy. We can see that this is the process, and then if we put this over here, the thread, there is only one thread in this command prompt. And then we can see all of the traffic going down. And what we need is a little bit more information. So what I might add is the file name column, which is already there. I just need to move it across. We'll put the... Now, putting the data on the left-hand side of the goal bar is actually a very easy way of expanding all the nodes. So if I had expanded the nodes, I would have seen it on a right-hand column. But if you just want to make it forced to show everything and expand them all out, just shove it on the left of the gold and that's what you get. So this is pretty well close. I should have done a Process Monitor at the same time, but this is pretty close to what you'll see in Process Monitor. You'll see a time where it happened. The difference between those two is duration, and we need the duration column. So I'm going to... Where is it? Duration. I missed it.
Bottom.
At the bottom.
All right, so this is going to make the graph complain, but I'll move it up to here and put it next to the file name. That's because I took it off the blue bar on the right. Mm-hmm. It now doesn't have any data to graph.
And the stuff to the right of the blue bar is what is going to be in the graph.
Yeah, right? Actually, I can actually fix that. I can actually put it on there twice. If I put it, if I drag it onto a second time, I can fix that. And then I'll get the graph back again. But now we have something that's kind of close. So we've got command.exe, here's a thread. So we could have set a filter, say, hey, I want this process ID, I want this thread ID, and then we'd be looking at this segment. And then Mark shows the start time. I don't think he's got an end time column. And then let's move that duration column next to here. And... Unfortunately, it's kind of made a sub key, but that's a bit annoying. And then you've got each operation. You've got the file name it hit. Now, under Process Monitor, we'll do a reset. See how we've got all of these in the default filter? We've got all this path and MST and all that stuff all filtered out. This is what Mark calls the advanced options. Where's it gone? Come on. Where'd you go? So under filter, he's got enable advanced output. And what that's going to do is throw away all those criterias, right? And so if we bring it down to roughly what we're seeing in WPA, you've got times, you've got the process. We could add the thread ID column as well. Kind of hard when the screen caps makes everything so small. But we get all these names, right? We get the raw name. And this is what you're going to see in WPA. You're going to see this more of this more raw name. So ERPMJ, which is, an ERP is an IO request packet, which is roughly, hey, you ask the operating system to do something. And then MJ is major, and it's the major code. So there's a major code and a minor code. From memory, major code 4 is create, and so that's what that create word there. If we do something equivalent, that's what create here means. It's a major code 4, and then there'll be a subcode. For query information, you actually can ask, it uses the subcode just to ask how it's going to do it. So there's basic, there's full, and all these other keywords. So sometimes the minor code is used. So these two are the ERP major minor, which I said is, this is the major code, and it doesn't show the minor in process monitor. And then we're seeing all of the activity, right? That's really all there is to file management. I mean, you're looking at start times, end times. We might say on this duration column, let's just modify it and say, hey, I just wanted to make sure that there's nothing overly long in my process. And for command prompt, the longest one was 77 microseconds US. Right, so nothing to be concerned with, where the system had something that was 106,000 microseconds, which is
106 milliseconds.
106 milliseconds, which is 0.1 of a second, and it was this one right here, and there was a write, and this is where you'll see those things that are filtered out from process monitor. You'll see these MFTs. So once again, process monitor has got one more thing that's advantage. You don't see the noise of the operating system. You don't see NTFS and all these other things doing the journaling that's behind all the file I.O. So it's one of those things you just have to be aware of. As I said, slicing and dicing, yeah, it's not really that really complex. Just do it, go in with a purpose and try to find something. In this sense, because I'm sorting by time, we just see linear nature of it. And so you can see that I said in the CMD prompt, run the CMD script. And so, you know, it's trying to open the file. Create is the word for open. It's the same IOs used for either create or open. It just means whether you will or won't try making the file. If we add the stack column, we can see and resolve symbols. We can see it was command prompt, exe did it itself. It went in through some BAT processing code. So CMD files are BAT files, slightly different to each other. The only difference is that a BAT file tries to run autoexec.bat and what was that one?
config.sys.
And so they still exist. So if you have a BAT file, there's actually a file called autoexec.nt and config.nt in system 32, I think. And if you run a BAT file, it runs those still. And if you have a CMD file, it doesn't.
Yeah, I wouldn't have suspected that.
That is the difference.
I don't know that I've seen anyone use those in years.
Yeah, so that's the benefit of CMD over BAT file. Hmm. But it still processes if it's a BAT file format. And then you can see it doing BAT file and working, and then here's the create file that eventually called. You may get a little bit further down the stack in here than you will in Process Monitor. Process Monitor inserts its filter driver at the top of the stack, and this is lower than that. It's this file IO info is lower than it in the call stack tree, and so it may be longer or maybe shorter based on how Mark inserts his driver. So there might be a different height difference. So in this case, you can see that, you know, it did a thing, asked some basic information about the file. We can go, well, did that even succeed? We can add the status column Is it already loaded? Status, a result. So we can move the result column up, and then we can see the success or failure and extra information too, and how big it was and stuff like that. Mm. Kind of cool. As you can see, it's going through these file IO ones. And interesting, I found this one interesting. See how it starts doing these XPerf ones? So this is trying to, so in the batch file, it's got, you know, xperf.exe run these commands. What it's trying to work out is trying to do a file find of where xperf is. And you'll see it tries it in the local directory, which is where I am, cdumps. Then it tries it with xperf quote star, and then it tries just xperf, and then it tries it in system32.
And so then, this is actually going through your search path.
Exactly. And so here's this next one. WebBAM is one of the things on your path. PowerShell. And then SysInternals happens to be on my path, so that's one of the things it looks for. Doesn't find it there either. And I have Windows Performance Toolkit on my path. And it does find it. It's successful.
So this is, you can get a little insight to how the operating system actually functions.
Yeah.
And if you go over, you can even see the call stack for those, and you'll probably see some function relating to
some
search
path
paths.
Thing. Yeah. So let's expand this one and see if we can find something interesting. So,
search for executable.
There you go. So, it's an interesting insight into the OS, and that's what file is all about. And I won't really go into much more detail about file because it's kind of obvious. The other one is registry. So let's have a look at the registry one. The registry one has only one keyword: registry. Which is kind of easy to remember. It does have a lot of stack keywords available. A lot. So RegHive and the other ones are different to each other. And we'll do RegHive last quickly. Once again, much like with a file, you know, open, close, rewrite, all that type of stuff. I'm sure there's lots in here you don't want. The KCB ones, the virtualizers, stuff like that. Regflush is one of the ones you may want. You want to, because when you flush it out, it means that there's going to be a lock on the registry on your Hive, which means nobody else can read or write to it for a little while. So if you're seeing flushes, you might want to know who caused that flush on my registry and who locked it up and stopped it. Oops. Registry. And I'm just going to do this and click around, and that should be enough. Now, of course, you can combine all of these, right? So the file and registry are particularly two that I would envision that you grab all these keywords, all these hundreds of characters, and put them all together. There isn't, in XPerf, there isn't a kernel group that has registry or file. So they're both ones you have to do it yourself, yeah. There is ones in WPA, but once again, they're,
WPR.
So there is file and there is registry. But once again, they are grabbing nearly all the stacks that are available. They're grabbing all this extra stuff to do with filters. And they are picking up, like, file picks up disk at the same time and stuff like that. The registry one, much the same. It is picking up everything. And in this case, it's actually picking up the Redis thread and all that stuff, which was the weight analysis. And that can be hot. And so, once again, I would suggest you use WPR when you're a novice. You don't really know what you're going for. Go for a bigger data set. If you have more experience, you're in sensitive environments like production and stuff, go the more targeted thing. If there's a kernel group in XPerf, just use the kernel group, stop the time typing in stuff, and then if you're comfortable with it, drop down to the scripting approach. And as I said, if you have scripts already, it's much easier to adjust them and stuff.
And you're going to have your scripts for download?
Yep, every single episode's had them. I have been, as I've been preparing each episode, I have been updating them. So this is probably, I think my scripts are solid now, because I've been slicing and dicing them and making them into appropriate episodes.
Yeah.
Like the next three or four episodes are now done as well. So probably this episode's a good episode to come and grab it. I don't think I'm going to change it for a while now.
Good.
So, and it's like 10 scripts. It is, here it is. It's all these. So, CPU we've done on air. That's episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, episode 4, registry, episode 5. Oh, so this is episode 7. Sorry, we did all the base ones, and then we've still got network pull, power, reference set, RPC, working set trim, drivers, mini filter, and CLR left. So. If I can be
That's
bothered.
A whole nother season of defrag
tools. So, I'm going to get past 50, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's have a look at this registry one. Obviously, it's going to look a lot like the file one. Interestingly, it has different columns for time. The operation time is the equivalent of the start column in the file one. They don't have start and end. And they have the operation time happened and then the elapsed time.
And elapsed time same as duration?
Yeah, but there's no end column.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the particular data set that the registry chose to... chose to export for tracing.
Yeah. So we might make this one max as well. And so in this case, we can say, hey, we'll just use, let's see if, is CMD even in here? Yeah, it is. So once again, we can sort by time. That's the order that they happened. If we wanted, we could throw the thread on there, but there's only one thread anyway. Here's our time in microseconds again. Once again, they're all sub 50, which is all a great time. And then we've got the key they're trying to do. And so what happened in the script file was it tried to run XPerf, of course. And so what you see is image file execution options. And we looked at that in some of the debugging episodes, how you can override applications and stuff. And so first thing it checks is XPerf. Got these things that modify its behavior. Mm-hmm. And then this one is looking up something to do with app compat. I'm sure Gove could tell us what that means. More app compat. So this one's at the user level. This one's at the system level. And then some side-by-side information, which do you know what that is? I've never seen it before.
That has to do with when you have multiple versions of the same DLL, and we provide a way to have those both exist on the same system. And we pull the appropriate one in.
Cool. Yeah. And if we had on status is there, where's status? So it didn't find any settings for the first three, but it did find a side-by-side information. And then within that same key, it asked if the prefer external manifest was set. Okay. It asked for query value. So query value is read a value. So one of the things that people struggle with, and I'm one of the, I do it myself, is using the right terminology around the registry. Mm-hmm. This is a registry key. This is a registry value. All right. But a lot of people say for when it's the default key, so it has no value name.
Yeah.
They tend to give you this. Because that's the way of describing it. Because when it has brackets default, the value, there is no name of the value. Right?
And it's so the default value for that key.
Yeah, a lot of people say, and then if I had something here, a lot of people say that's the registry key,
and the data is
the registry value, and it's not.
Yeah.
That is not a registry key. That is a registry value.
And
that's the
data.
That's the registry data.
The value is what? ASD?
Yes.
No, the key. The
registry. The key. This is a key.
The key is called command.
And this is the value's name.
The value is ASD, whatever.
All right, so that's the value's name, and it could be set to something else that has a value.
Yes. So the value is obviously like C program files. Yeah. but it's a value name. It's a registry key name, or registry value name. See, yeah. I got it wrong.
The terminology
so
gets
it is
confusing.
Confusing concept.
Yeah, people tend to use registry key as just this blanket term, but technically the key is the folder name if you look at it in the folder view.
And so this one is reading like ASDF, right? But you could see query, which is trying to find out what keys are below it.
Yeah.
Doesn't this key exist underneath
it? It makes sense, because if you export it, you're exporting the key, which is the folder, the value.
File, yeah.
Yeah, and it's important to kind of get those differences straight in your head when you're looking at this, because you see things in here like a query value, and that's very different from open a key.
Hmm. And as I said, you also get query, which is finding out, does the sub-key exist?
Yeah.
Right, so it's not, you can get confused. Anyway, so that's not registry. I'm not going to slice and dice it anymore. It's kind of obvious, much like XPerf, process monitor, you can get the columns the same, slice and dice and everything else. And the last one we're going to do to squeeze this in is registry hive. So a hive is local machine and classes root and all those things. In your profile, I'm not sure if it still exists in Windows 8, but there used to be ntuser.dat. Is that still in Windows 8?
I think so, yeah.
I think so. So that dat file is your registry. That's your current user registry file. And then it's called a registry hive, and we load that hive into memory, and then it represents itself as this registry tree.
And that would be called hkeyCurrentUser once it's loaded.
Yeah. And I think you can see all the ones, I don't know, because I'm in the administrative command prompt and bring up regedit.
Basically, the top level things here are your hives.
You can see all of the hives that are available, and it includes for other users.
Right.
Now, you'll notice that actually for me, this is my current user. This is my current user, and actually the current user's software classes node actually is a separate hive. So it's actually a branched in, mounted in. Mm-hmm. And so I have two hives. So if you're in a terminal server environment, obviously registry hive loading and unloading is important because you do a lot of churn on that. And that's one of the things we can do. And so instead of the registry keyword, we have the reg hive keyword. And there's three or four stacks. You flush hives. You don't flush registry. Say, if you say a registry flush, all it tells the OS is, please tell the hive to flush. Right, and it will flush out all of the changes, not just the flush of the one single registry key that you've done it against.
If you go back to your sort of analogizing this to like a file system, the hives are like the drive letter, like C colon is roughly analogous to registry hive, and then the registry keys are the folders on C. And then the registry values would be like the files.
And from a provider point of view, file IO is to disk as registry is to registry hive. All right. So let's collect a registry hive. I'm going to get this running in the background, and I'm actually going to control C this batch file. So XPerf's still running, right? And I'm going to log off. And so logging off is going to close my hive, right? And then we'll log on again.
So hkeyCurrentUser no longer exists.
Mm-hmm. And I'll wait a little while so that's more obvious in the trace file. And
it's been reloaded.
Oops. And then we want xperf minus stop minus d reg hive.atl. And so that's going to stop that trace that we left running in the background. Now, this is one of the things where before we always got this we had the system activity, which is more like CPU and processes and images and stuff. And then we regularly are getting this storage one underneath it, and that's where the file IO and the reg IO went to. This is one of the cases where there isn't a graph to help you, and it actually comes up under generic events, right? So everything that we're logging is going to these providers, and these providers can tell you when I got data. And so for this one, as images came and gone, the loader keyword that's what's going into here and also into here. System configuration is right at the end. There's a big pile of them. You know how when we do minus D, it slows, it's nice, it takes a while. Well, what it's doing is it's gathering the system configuration, right? And it's and there's actually providers giving me display information and the platform information. And it's this provider that when you go trace system configuration, this is what that data came from. It's just a visualization of that provider. In the case of this registry stuff, it comes under the registry provider. And we'll just filter down to registry, expand it. And so this area here is when I logged off, and this is area here is when I logged on, right? And so if we look at this guy, we have the hive is dirty, destroy the hive, initialize the hive. And so you can see the initializers are around here, where the blue bar is, and the destroys are around here, right? And you can see the purple event there and this event here. As time went on, we actually made the hive dirty. So even before I started logging off, there was a dirty call, right? Mm-hmm. And we actually, I don't know if there's, if I recorded the stack for it. I think I did. But we can actually find out who told the OS that it was dirty.
The thing about registry hives is they're typically backed by a physical file on disk, but we don't necessarily need to update the physical disk file every time you write to the registry, so we kind of collate those and eventually do a flush out the disk.
I think the file and disk analogy is very good. Every single file IO you do, you don't do it to disk either, right? You wait for the disk to batch them all up and do it in one operation. So we can say that some ntdll process, so we need the process column, which is already here. You know, it's way easier to move things around in the viewer. We want the process and we want the thread, and we'll get the process name too. So it's actually an unknown. The first one was an SVC host, okay? We don't need it twice. And then there's a whole of threads who did it. And this one, the wild service. I have no idea what that is. WLID.
Oh, WLID.
It's not wild.
that's the Windows Live ID.
So it's marked it as dirty. As far as actual loading and unloading, the destruction was done by, surprise, surprise, the profile service, right? Mm-hmm. As you can see that the profile service said, hey, unload the entire registry hive. And you assume in reverse, the profile service initialized it. So you can add in durations and all that stuff. And so if you have a terminal server where people are complaining about log on time, you can check that your registry hive load and unload time is acceptable, right? And that's really it for registry and files and all stuff like that. As I said, use process monitor when you can.
Yeah.
But it is good for those environments where, like particularly the reg hive stuff, something they can't do. It's really good for big terminal servers and stuff like that. So when you're having performance issues. If you are going this approach, obviously you're probably going to gather a lot at the same time. You will get file at the same time. You will get disk at the same time. You will get registry at the same time. Probably good to get reg hive at the same time. So that script is going to get huge. That's okay though. Nothing wrong with that.
Great.
And that's it for the
Show for this week. If you have questions, email us at defragtools@microsoft.com, and we'll see you next week.
Have a good week.
Bye.